It's the time of year when we're all thinking about goals and priorities. Now is the time to plan your next trip. Whatever kind of travel fills you up, whether it's lounging on the beach, connecting with family and friends, or going on a foreign adventure, Expedia has the tools you need to plan a great trip. Download the Expedia app or visit Expedia.com to start planning. You do need to be a One Key member to use price tracking. Signing up is easy and free. Expedia, made to travel.
Hey, Keurig coffee drinkers. Need a cold coffee with a bold flavor? Dunkin' Cold K-Cup pods were specially crafted for cold coffee. Brew over ice straight out of the Keurig coffee maker for smooth, delicious Dunkin' taste you know and love. Find your next Dunkin' Cold coffee in the roasted coffee aisle.
I'm Oprah Winfrey. Welcome to Super Soul Conversations, the podcast. I believe that one of the most valuable gifts you can give yourself is time. Taking time to be more fully present. Your journey to become more inspired and connected to the deeper world around us starts right now. Friend is not a word I use loosely. I'm proud to call Elie Wiesel a friend for the past decade. He was born in 1928 in Sighet, Transylvania, now a part of Romania. One of four children, he had two older sisters, Hilda and Beatrice, and one younger named Zipporah. In 1944, Elie was 15 when the Nazis deported him and his family to Auschwitz. By the time the camps were liberated by the Allied troops less than a year later, his mother, father, and youngest sister had all perished. After the war, Elie embarked on a new life in Paris and became a journalist. It wasn't until he turned 30 that he decided to break his silence about his experiences during the war in a book called Night. Since its publication in 1958, Night has been translated into 30 languages, has been read by millions of people. In 2006, I chose it for my book club, and I had the privilege of visiting Auschwitz with Elie Wiesel as my guide. In 2011, Elie Wiesel was rushed into emergency open-heart surgery. His long road to recovery required a great deal of soul-searching, which resulted in this latest book, a powerful work of art that ruminates on questions of life and death that we all have and what it really means to be human. So may I say what an honor it is to have you here, my hero, my friend. After surviving open-heart surgery last year, how are you feeling?
Today, much better.
Today, much better.
First, because I'm with you, you know how much, how close I am to you.
Mm-hmm. Do you still feel that your body was ravaged by the opening of your heart?
It was, because I get tired very, very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
I used to walk a lot, no problem. Mm-hmm. But now, if I walk even 5 minutes, I get tired.
Really? In 2006, you and I walked the grounds of Auschwitz together, actually on my 52nd birthday, that was.
I remember that. What a gift I gave you, actually.
That was.
But it was a gift.
Yeah. You had written 47 books at the time, and you said that you hadn't begun yet. Do you still feel that way now?
Always.
I remember hearing that and thinking,
always, absolutely.
Really?
Every day, I ask myself the same question. What have I done? Is it enough? Does it justify all that I wanted to accomplish and to do? But I'm not sure of anything.
Wow. I'm going to get to that, more of that in a moment, because when I read this powerful little book, Open Heart, I couldn't believe that you were still questioning that. But when we were in Poland, I remember you said that the souls who perished at Auschwitz were still there, that they listen.
You know, I have in my pocket the picture of my little sister, which I've never spoken about, not even with you. The only time I cry, it's not when I speak about my parents, but I speak about my little sister.
Mm-hmm.
There, she makes me cry.
How old
seven,
was she?
Seven.
She was seven. She was seven when you went to the camp. I know, I remember walking the grounds with you and us standing there, the two of us standing there and looking at the way your sister had gone.
Yeah.
Why do you think it is speaking of her that still brings the tears? Because of a life
fulfilled, unlived? Why?
Why the children, my God? Why the children? You know, that a million and a half children were killed. Then, like that, straight from the train. Do you know what they have done to humanity? How many among them could have grown up to become scientists, physicians, poets, scholars, friends of humanity, saviors of the world? What they have done to the world.
Mm-hmm. You've witnessed and written about the depths of both human cruelty and also of what we call human grace. How do you make sense of the two extremes, even now, at 84?
That everything is possible.
Everything is possible.
Both evil, the power of evil, which on one level I cannot understand. Mm-hmm. Why evil? Even worse, why the seduction of evil? What is there in evil that becomes so seductive to some people?
You write on page 66, could it be that for God, evil represents just another path leading to good?
Yeah.
You say, for me, it is as impossible to accept Auschwitz with God as without God. But then how is one to understand his silence?
I don't.
You don't still.
I don't.
God's silence and the world's silence.
God's silence, at least God can say, who are you to understand me?
Yes.
But the world's silence is different. I don't understand it.
To this day.
To this day.
Yeah, it's so interesting, though, because you also write that if Auschwitz did not teach the world not to be racist, then what would? Yeah. Rwanda didn't, Cambodia didn't, Bosnia didn't. Are we evolving as a species from racism and that kind, those kinds of atrocities?
I spoke about that. I was invited a few years ago to address the General Assembly of the United Nations. And I called my lecture, Will the World Ever Learn?
Will the world ever learn?
And I answered, actually, no. It will not, because it hasn't. Otherwise, how is one to explain Rwanda? How is one to explain that racists are still on the planet? How is one to explain the violence? How is one to explain all that? Which means they haven't learned.
So do you think we will ever learn? Do you think we will as a species?
As a species, I don't know. We are dealing with hundreds and thousands of years. But at least the person, the individual, will the individual learn?
Will the individual learn?
Those who
That's what matters.
Every single human being is a unique human being. And therefore, it's so criminal to do something to that human being, because he or she represents humanity. But let they change, at least.
Yes. Yeah, as you're speaking, I was thinking, the better question is not, will we as a species evolve? The better question for everybody watching is, will you?
Exactly.
Is will
That's
you.
Exactly it.
Yes. Wow. Open heart surgery. How did that act, that physical act, change you?
First of all, I wasn't so sure I would make it.
Yes.
Another 3 hours, I don't think I would have been here.
Really?
Yeah.
Was that serious?
That serious. 5 arteries were blocked. 5, it means all the 5 arteries were blocked.
Wow. Wow. I'm going to read from page 21 here, where you say, suddenly I realize that I'm in the hands of the surgeon and must face the truth. When I fall asleep, it may well be forever. Am I afraid to die? In the past, whenever I thought of death, I was not frightened. Hadn't I lived with death, even in death? I love that sentence. Hadn't I lived with death, even in death? Because that's what Auschwitz was.
Absolutely.
That was my biggest realization. I remember standing there on the snowy grounds and thinking, this was a death sure. machine. It was a factory that produced death. Like it was a that death was
Absolutely.
A business. Death was a business. So you had lived in death. Why should I be afraid now? Were you afraid?
Yes, curious and afraid at the same time.
Curious?
Yes. That means what is?
Curious about what would happen next, what the transition would be.
What will happen? Will I die?
Uh-huh.
And if I die, what will it be then? All that I have read about death and studied.
But you must have thought about it, but not in that way.
Not in that way.
Not until you're faced with possibly this is the moment.
Also, I never come so close.
So close.
Except during the war.
Yeah.
Look, in Auschwitz, every day I was like that.
Yeah, but when you're living with that kind of, living in that kind of constant state of fear, I wonder, and we've talked about this before, does a part of you go numb to it? You have to go, does a part of you go numb to it in the death camp?
You mean then? No.
Then?
It was acceptance.
It was accepting that at any moment I can...
Any moment I can die.
Any moment.
Any moment. All I wanted really is my father for me.
Yes.
My father.
And the two of you arguing over who should have the piece of bread.
Piece of bread, exactly.
He wanting you to have it,
and
you wanted
my,
him to,
trying him to have it. Convince each other that I'm
yes.
not hungry. He said,
I'm not hungry.
Hungry, sure.
Yeah.
And he was so hungry.
Well, that makes me, every time I see that story or read that story, it makes me want to cry because both of you are starving and each saying, I'm not hungry, you take it.
Mm. On May 10th, Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes is coming to IMAX and theaters everywhere.
What a wonderful day!
This summer, one movie event will reign.
It is our time.
Apes hunt humans. That is wrong.
Bend for your king.
Never.
Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Only in theaters May 10. Tickets on sale now. Rated PG-13. Some material may be inappropriate for children under 13.
Life is a highway. And on it, there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy. So go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
So let's get back to the hospital bed. You're lying there in the hospital
so
bed
lying
and suddenly
there.
Realize that it's a different kind of fear than the death, than when you were in the death camps.
Especially since in the meantime, they had called already. Marion, my wife, mm-hmm. and my son. And I saw them, and I realized, that is more serious than I thought.
Yes.
If they called them, that means it's very serious. And in truth, I was not sure that I would see them again.
Wow. And that realization did what to you?
Oh, I had tears in my eyes, as I have now.
Mm-hmm.
After all, it's true, I was 82. But I still had so many things to tell them and so many things to do, so many words to write, so many books to read, so many people to see, so many friends to embrace. I wasn't ready.
You weren't ready?
I wasn't ready. My life wasn't finished. I couldn't accept.
Well, you say on page 34, many texts describe the beyond. Few take place in paradise. Most unfold in hell. Am I, in fact, already on the other side? If not, would I have been permitted a glimpse into the beyond? I'm lying on my hospital bed, but it is hell. My skin is ripping apart. My entire body is aflame. I see myself in hell, ruled by cruel, pitiless angels, my head filled with medieval descriptions of unimaginable punishments. I do know what takes place in these dreadful abysses. Now, I read this and I think, if Elie Wiesel ends up in hell, then I don't have a chance. I gotta say.
You never know why one is in hell.
Oh my goodness. This thing you were describing, lying on the hospital bed, skin ripping apart, body aflame, see myself in hell. What was that? Was that your imagination? Were you having a out-of-body experience? What was that?
Both imagination, mm-hmm. but based on knowledge.
Based upon knowledge.
Because I have read these texts mm-hmm. earlier, years mm-hmm. earlier. I've read them.
Mm-hmm.
So they came back to me. And because they came back while I was lying there, I thought, well, maybe that's it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I only had ideas about death, images from death.
You say on page 61, what does being resuscitated mean if not rediscovering one's future?
Sure. All of a sudden, sure. Oh, I write about my grandchildren there, for instance, of course.
Yes. You know. So I loved when you awakened and your grandson said, Grandpa, if I see you're in pain, if I loved you more, would you have less pain?
Yeah. Yes. I know, he said, that you have great pain, but you know that I have great love for you. Tell me, if I love you more, will you have less pain?
Oh.
Extraordinary.
Yeah.
It's extraordinary.
Extraordinary.
Yeah.
Did open heart surgery make you fall in love more deeply with life?
With the living, first of all, of course. Much more, let's say, with Marion, my wife. We have been married for so many decades.
Yeah. I was just going to say, in many ways, I think this book is like a love poem written for Marion and also...
And for my grandchildren.
And for your son and grandchildren.
Oh, absolutely.
It's a love poem for Marion and your grandchildren.
You are absolutely right.
Yeah, that's what it feels like.
It's a love song.
It's a love song.
Love song, yeah.
Yeah. So you came back loving them more intensely.
Yes, because every moment was essential. Mm-hmm. When you are in the hospital, you cannot move without pain, you cannot think without fear. Mm-hmm. But every moment counts. Mm-hmm. Every second matters. Every gesture is essential to you.
But you knew that.
But I never felt it.
You knew it.
Theoretically, I knew it.
Yeah, theoretically, sure. You knew it.
Oh, I knew all the ideas I had.
Yeah. So let me read from page 72. I belong to a generation that has often felt abandoned by God and betrayed by mankind. And yet, I believe that we must not give up on either. We must choose between the violence of adults and the smiles of children. Mm-hmm. Between the ugliness of hate and the will to oppose it. Between inflicting suffering and humiliation on our fellow man and offering him the solidarity and hope he deserves or not. I know I speak from experience that even in darkness, it is possible to create light and encourage compassion. There it is. I still believe in man, in spite of man. That is so beautiful.
You read so beautifully.
No, you write so beautifully.
Not really.
Oh my goodness, that is so beautiful.
You probably have known one another for so many years. And finally, you discover that I write beautifully.
Oh. Then you say, illness may diminish me, but it will not destroy me. The body is not eternal, but the idea of the soul is. The brain will be buried, but memory will survive it. What do you think now happens, now that you've had all this time to think about it, what do you now think happens when we die?
Look, somehow, I re-become a child. Mm-hmm. I always, childhood for me is a theme in all my work. Re-become a child. Will I meet my parents again? I want to know that. Will I meet them again?
Did you see your father when you were on that hospital bed?
Absolutely.
You saw him?
Absolutely, I saw him.
Saw him as in coming to visit you?
Absolutely, yes.
Absolutely.
I saw my father.
Did you see your sister?
My little sister. I cannot talk about her because I start crying. Mm-hmm. But my father, I saw him. My father and I were so close, and because of the way he died, that he has never left me. On a different level, totally different level. When I got the Nobel Prize, huge ceremony, of course, once in a lifetime. Mm-hmm. And you are at the center of the world, the whole world looks. And I remember, it was great. I had my son with me, Alicia, Marion with me. My older sister was there. Then came my turn. And all of a sudden, I looked up and I saw my father in the hall.
When you were getting the Nobel Prize?
I couldn't speak. I couldn't open my mouth. It took me, I think, one or two or three long, endless minutes, probably, to start talking. But I couldn't talk. So therefore, again, on the hospital bed, again, I saw my father.
Did he speak?
No, he was just there looking.
Mm-hmm. When you saw your father, did you think maybe I've gone to the other side?
Exactly.
I would think
maybe,
so.
I said maybe he came to take me. Not only he, but all those who left before me.
Yeah.
There I thought about my mother and my little sister. Maybe they came to take me with them. Mm-hmm. So I was very close. And in the hospital bed, it was almost reassuring. I will not be alone. They are there with me. And that is the danger usually, I think, in being so sick. It's a danger that you feel it's so good being with the dead. And why not join them? It will be a liberation.
Well, yes, I've heard people speak of going to the other side and feeling that it's so comfortable and welcoming there that they don't want to come back.
What for?
Yeah.
Really?
But you did, because you had more loving to do.
I had more and more things to do.
More things to do.
You know, I always have that feeling.
Yes.
You know, that I haven't even begun.
One of the things that I know you love as much as I do is teaching.
Oh, yes.
Because at your heart, that's who you are, a teacher.
Absolutely.
What do you think is, if you had to summarize, the greatest offering that you've been able to give your students, what would that be?
You know, sometimes they ask me, what should we take away from your classes? And a few times I came up with a formula, which I'm not sure is always good, but I said simply, look, whatever you do in life, remember, think higher and feel deeper. It cannot be bad if you do that.
Think
just
higher.
Always think higher and feel deeper.
And feel deeper.
Life is not a feast. Life is an open hand, waiting for some other hand to enter it.
Yes.
Into friendship.
Yes.
Ultimately, the answers are so simple. Not simplistic, but so simple.
So simple.
It's so simple to do something with our life, but do it.
So that's that will be with me for the rest of my life. Think higher.
Sure.
Feel deeper. Yeah. That will be with me for the rest of my life. And I know so many of you too really got that on the level that you've offered it.
On May 10th, Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes is coming to IMAX and theaters everywhere.
What a wonderful day!
This summer, one movie event will reign.
It is our time.
Apes hunt humans. That is wrong.
Bend for your king.
Never.
Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Only in theaters May 10. Tickets on sale now. Rated PG-13. Some material may be inappropriate for children under 13.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
One of the other great lessons I felt inside myself when we were together at Auschwitz is how passiveness and indifference is actually worse than hatred.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
That's Can you speak to that for a moment? How being passive and indifferent is actually worse than...
I have dedicated my life not only to fight evil, it's too difficult, but to fight indifference.
Indifference, yes.
I came out with some formula. I began saying that the opposite of love is not hate, but indifference.
Mm-hmm.
But the opposite of knowledge is not ignorance, but indifference.
Indifference.
The opposite of beauty is not ugliness, but indifference to beauty and to ugliness. Indifference enables everything which is bad in life. And therefore, fight indifference. The idea that the victim should say that nobody cares, that hurts me.
Hmm.
Because we had that feeling, nobody cares.
Yes, and I'm sure that every victim of war feels the same when you read the stories of Rwandans.
True, absolutely.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Sure.
800,000 people in 100 days.
Like that. You think, like that.
Like that.
Like
nobody
that.
Cared. But the memory, as you write so beautifully in Open Heart, that what remains when the brain is buried, when it's all is gone, sure. is that the memory.
Absolutely. The yeah. memory is stronger than anything else, mm-hmm. strangely enough. Memory has power. And ultimately, at the end, what remains? The memory of a prayer, if not a prayer.
Mm-hmm.
The memory of a friendly smile, if it's not a friend.
Mm-hmm.
But something, that memory. We work for that memory.
Is
we live
the
for that
memory,
memory.
In some way, when I was reading yeah, your beautiful words, I've now discovered you're such a beautiful writer. When I was reading Open Heart, I was thinking, in some ways, the way you describe it, memory feels like spirit. It feels like the spirit of the person.
It is.
Yes.
It is.
The spirit of the person.
Yes, but the memory combines many things.
Yes.
Sadness and joy, hope and despair. And ultimately, I think, what is life? Surely it is a sum of memories. But memory is more than the total sum.
Mm-hmm.
It's more than 1 + 1 + 1.
Yes.
There is something about memory, yes. which is always with a capital M, almost.
That is why Alzheimer's is such a devastating disease.
My God.
And why, lying on the hospital bed, the thing you were most worried about
mind.
Is your mind. Is your mind.
Oprah, years ago, I published a novel, which was the saddest novel I have written, called The Forgotten.
Mm.
It's about Alzheimer's. And I compared the Alzheimer's patient to a book. Every day you tear out a page,
yes.
and another page, and another page. At the end, there is nothing but
there's
the cover.
But the covers, yes.
That's the Alzheimer's patient.
Yes.
And I was also wondering then, and what happens if a whole period is forgotten?
Yes.
If the whole world would have Alzheimer's.
Then who are you?
Who are we?
Then who are you?
Who are we? Mm-hmm. That is what?
You asked that question on the lying in the hospital bed. Who am I?
Sure, naturally.
And what was the answer?
I don't know yet. that's exactly it.
Really?
Only the last moment, I think. Really, with the last breath. The last question would be, and who am I? And then if I have the answer, I wouldn't even know how to transmit it. Because God alone will know the answer.
Mm-hmm. I thought it was so stunning as I was reading this, and all of the producers around here, all of us, too, when we got together, first of all, Elie Wiesel, that you, on the hospital bed, number one, would sense fear and would also have those questions still about your life.
Well, I define myself more by my questions than by my answers, because answers come and go,
mm-hmm.
but questions remain.
Mm-hmm. You've said that Holocaust survivors are becoming an endangered species. Indeed, you all are. Yet, you don't fear the memory of the Holocaust will ever be lost.
Why?
Why?
I'll tell you why. Because, you know, all of us who went through that experience consider ourselves as witnesses.
Mm.
When the last witness will be gone, I don't want to be that one. It's too tragic. What will happen? So on one hand, you could become pessimistic. With the last witness, all the knowledge, all the experience, all the memories will be buried. Then what? So I came up with a theory, which I think is valid,
mm-hmm.
to listen to a witness is to become one.
To listen to a witness.
Is to become a witness.
To become a witness.
So therefore, those who have listened to us, who read my books and other survivors' memoirs,
mm-hmm.
we have a lot of witnesses now.
Mm-hmm.
And they will protect not only our past, but also their future.
You know, there's a picture of us that was taken at Auschwitz where I think we're facing one of the graves. Remember that picture where we're? And I remember for days and days and weeks afterwards, and even still now, feeling like I bore witness to something that
Well, you are, absolutely.
Yes, that I bore, I was able to bear witness in a way that we could then allow the world to see and experience people that hadn't seen or known it in that way before.
Therefore, I believe that event with the capital E was of such grandeur, of such magnitude, of such depth, that it would not be forgotten.
Will not be
it
forgotten.
Will hound our society and many generations to come with its fear, with its trembling, but also with its impossible hope.
I have to ask you this, because we spoke a couple of years ago and you had just been through a stunning experience of all the stunning things that had happened to you. But when you got the call that you had lost your entire life savings, as well as $15 million of the foundation that you and Marianne had worked your whole lives for because of Bernie Madoff, what was the first thing you did? I mean, that's an unbelievable call to get.
I remember we were out and we came home and it was almost near midnight. The telephone rang and we were frightened. Midnight.
Midnight.
It was Alicia. Alicia said, first of all, don't worry, everybody's good in the family, nothing happened, nothing, but now sit down.
Sit down. This is your son.
My son. And our son, really, he was a member, then he was a member of our board. And he actually didn't like the idea that we had placed so much money with Madoff.
Because you'd placed all the money with Madoff.
Yes, he said too much, and so that was a few months earlier before that. And we told him, come on, we know people who did that. Yeah, we can't even give. If I told you the names, you would be surprised. The most prestigious names in the financial world have given him the money. So why shouldn't we? He said, he's in jail. We looked at each other, and really our reaction was, we have seen worse.
You and Marianne?
Yes, both she and I. We have seen worse.
Yes, you've lived through death camps.
It has touched us, but not deeply, really. So it's true, we lost everything. But for the foundation, something very beautiful happened. All of a sudden, we began receiving hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of letters and donations, small donations, from all over America. Jews and non-Jews, young and younger, pocket monies, Christmas money, Hanukkah money. That was so uplifting. You know, the American people are so generous. We are a generous people. No other nation has given so much to charity, to philanthropy, as the American people.
We rise up in a crisis, we do.
Automatically, yes.
We do.
So we received hundreds of them every week, and that helped us.
But you didn't have to change the way you lived, because there were people who had given him money and lost their homes. So you didn't lose your
homes.
No,
the homes we did not.
Yeah.
But look, we had to change our lifestyle right away, immediately.
Really?
But not much. Look, I teach. I have a good salary. And I give lectures and I write books. So it didn't change our life anyway. It didn't make me more pessimistic. It didn't make me more desperate and even not more skeptical about the otherness of the other.
The otherness of the other?
Yeah.
Meaning people?
Meaning Madoff.
Yeah.
There was some otherness in him, of course, which I don't want to accept as part of human nature, that he could do that.
That he could do that. You say at the end of the book, open heart. It might seem that I am not the man I was before June 16, 2011, but on a level close to the absolutes that are life and death, I have remained the same. What is different is that I now know that every moment is a new beginning. every handshake a promise. I know that every quest implicates the other, just as every word can become prayer. If life is not a celebration, why remember it? If life, mine or that of my fellow man, is not an offering to the other, what are we doing on this earth? True. That's just the most beautiful. Yeah.
True.
True.
It is true what I said.
Because
at that moment,
ultimately, sure. I mean, I see that too. I see this show, I see this network as an offering. I see, that's why I said, ask the question, what is the offering you've given to your students? I see that our role in humanity as each individual is to give an offering to each other.
It's also to create a world with friends, friendship. To me, friendship is mm-hmm. like a religion. Mm-hmm. We couldn't live without it. Perhaps we could live for a while without love, but not without friendship.
We could not. No. Because isn't friendship a form of love?
Yes, but a different kind.
Different kind, yeah.
Love is demanding mm-hmm. in its, the best sense of the word. Mm-hmm. Friendship is not. Mm-hmm.
What is it you most want the world to know?
That if there is one person on the planet who still is suffering from loneliness and from pain or despair, and we don't know about it, or we don't want to know about it, then something is wrong with the world.
And each of us, through our wanting to know and wanting the other person, whomever that is, to not to feel alone.
That's exactly it.
Yeah. That's it.
I cannot cure everybody. I cannot help everybody. Mm-hmm. But to tell the lonely person that I am not far or different from that lonely person, that I am with him or her, mm-hmm. That's all I think we can do, and we should do, therefore. Mm.
That's the great spiritual path.
It is.
I love you, Elie Wiesel.
I love you.
I love you. No, I love you more.
Okay, let's quarrel a little
okay,
bit.
Okay, okay. That's beautiful. Thank you. This is a love poem, and that interview was a prayer. Thank you.
I'm Oprah Winfrey, and you've been listening to Super Soul Conversations, the podcast. You can follow Super Soul on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. If you haven't yet, go to Apple Podcasts and subscribe, rate, and review this podcast. Join me next week for another Super Soul Conversation. Thank you for listening.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.